Dark wings.
Dork words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 2, Episode 7.
A Man Without Honor. Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Phil Jonak.
Craig absorbed copious amounts of internet knowledge this week. Care of TowerOfTheHand.com?
TowerOfTheHand.com, yeah.
Or org?
I think I'm pretty sure it's .com.
TowerOfTheHand.com, baby.
Because the wrist ain't listening. It still took me about 6 hours to get through 50 chapters, 50 out of 70, I think, in the whole book chapters of liner notes / Cliff's Notes edition. If anyone wants to go there and do a refresher, it's not an instant thing. I thought it would be, this is a 2 paragraphs on every chapter. It'll be quick. It'll be easy.
But it was refreshing.
It was refreshing, but it's still, to do the whole thing, it'll take me about 8 hours of reading, because I'm now, for the first time in my life, reading for comprehension.
And not simply for pleasure?
And not for, I guess.
Should have tried that in college.
The nice thing about that site is it has it has mouse overs for every possible name, place, so you can just hover the mouse over and find out. Footnotes, lots of footnotes, and they warn if they're spoilers. Although I did find one erroneous mouse over where it said that a maester was the name of Dunk's horse. Which could also be true. Maybe he named his horse Maester.
He did.
Well, it was a bad link.
I can corroborate that.
Then we mouse over Chuck and something.
Something will pop up. Give it a try.
Speaking of popping things popping up, let's start with the episode. Ygritte, John.
Speaking of Maesters.
Oh.
Sorry, I'll just jump ahead to whatever mystery girl allegedly, who apparently is from Volantis. Rob Stark's new girlfriend, Field Surgeon X.
Yep. Hot lips.
Dr. Jane.
She said they have a Meister at the Crag.
Yeah.
Well, she's from Volantis. She doesn't know any better,
well,
right?
Well, okay.
Did she say Meister?
She said Meister.
Did she say Meister Stone or Meister
Cut.
Steel?
Did you mean Munster?
The Munsters live at the Crag.
I meant the cheese, but okay.
Eddie Munster.
I was trying to start the podcast about the episode.
Are we going to talk about the elephant in the room? And by that, I mean Jon Snow's dick.
Well, I wasn't going to go into detail about that. I just thought we could get started on the...
Well, I mean, there was only about 10 minutes worth of discussion about boners.
So you think it's worth discussing in detail?
If Phil finally found something he wants to talk about.
Go ahead, Phil. Let's.
Well, no, you don't use your stones take. In a while, and they drop to the ice, I think. They get blue.
I see even the wildlings have heard the legend of blue balls. No, I mean, it's not a legend, right, guys? It's real.
Is he a pirate?
I settle on back, mates, the legend of blue balls.
You know what a legend is? It's what you leave behind.
You mean a legacy?
Oh, that's a Subaru.
The cheese.
So Jon Snow got.
Jon Snow.
I'm not talking about his dick anymore. No.
Finally.
Jon Snow got. He got jumped by a crafty crew of wildlings after a long period of flirtation with his quarry.
Extended period.
How
yes.
far do you think she would have taken it in front of her spies?
Didn't seem like she made her move, like, let's get naked and see what happens, until she knew that her bros were right over the ridge.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So, even though it seemed like...
I want to believe that all that hot stuff she said was true, though.
We all do. Even John does.
He was fighting it, but...
She made... they did a great job of encapsulating the inherent illogic... between the conflict between the Wildlings and the Night's Watch.
Yep.
Yep. Gave John pause for the 10th time that day.
He just kind of comes out and says that he's Ned Stark's kid, too. Maybe not the best idea.
A little boastful.
Yeah. But a couple people gave away stuff this episode that they probably should have kept their mouths shut about.
Yep. Lots of giving it away.
But it didn't matter in the end.
Well, let's review. What are kind of the major set pieces this week? There's Theon and his pursuit of Bran and Rickon and Osha and Hodor, who have fled Winterfell.
Hodor.
There's
and his continued search for respect from anyone.
Yeah, everything he does is about saving face and impressing his unruly band of
Finchies.
For the second time, he's also given pause by his actions, his kind of trying to keep up with being a badass actions that shock and repulse himself. Struggle, inner struggles, maybe.
Yeah, let's just discuss this whole arc. Well, let's focus on Theon.
He would like that.
He has to save face by beating up the guy who was charged with guarding Bran's room, presumably. They don't really explain how they gave him the slip.
Right.
Unnecessary, right? I mean, the one guy already paid the price to, you know, for letting them escape by getting knifed in the aorta. Not aorta, the jugular. By Osha.
And Theon gave him a sound pounding. thrashing.
It's not what it sounds
sound
like.
Thrashing.
It's still
a pound sounding. yeah.
So again, I'm clearly just like, oh, I can't just let this impertinence slide because my impertinent warriors will cease to respect me.
I was expecting maybe a sword to come out, you know, or something. Or
I thought maybe he would go that far, but I think he's a little sword shy after the sad hacking he did on
Sir Roderick.
Well, his punching wasn't much better to open
up. Yeah, he pulled back the injured hand.
Did the old wave the knuckles.
But the guy looked like he was hurt. Did he pay the iron price?
But he's still out of breath at the end of it, you know, and kind of huffing and puffing from just beating one guy up.
He did. He was on the ball there. He's like, get the horses and the hounds, and they're off. And they pick up
and
the
trail.
Off. And then we cut to Bran, Rickon, Osha, Hodor on the run, and they're observing some children. And they say, oh, we know those guys. They'll give us some food. And is it Osha that says, no, we can't afford, or Bran?
No, Bran does.
Bran says, no, if we...
They'll torture him and...
Everyone's becoming shrewder, you know? Everyone's getting a little more on the ball and figuring things out. And
even Hodor figured out how to crack a walnut with his bare fist.
Yeah, and drop it and leave a trail of walnut crumbs for everyone to follow.
Hodor.
That's right, so later we see... Theon and his crew, they followed their trail to, what, a little village of some kind? Is that essentially...
It was the place, the same place.
It was the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It was a farm?
Yeah, it was just a farm.
And
a farm fast.
They don't see anybody there. The old man they haul off doesn't seem to know anything about them. And then Finchie's like, over here, found some walnuts. They send the maester back home. He's like, oh, don't do whatever it is you're going to do. And then the next thing we know, we're back at Winterfell, and Theon's like, hey, I told you bad shit would happen if you fucked with me, and behold. And then there's, like, twisted, burned corpses of
missing arms,
little boys.
And apparently he didn't know what was about to come up, because he was like, told you what would happen if you... Oh, my God! What did you... Did you burn them? Oh, disgusting. Anyway, what's going to happen?
Well, they can't tell who these kids are now if you burn them. I mean,
well, people are led to, you know...
You mean you don't believe that it's Bran and Rickon that were burned?
Not really.
What, but...
I mean, the direwolves wouldn't let that happen, surely.
Yes, the absence of the direwolves.
I must say, they should have burned some Wolvian corpses, too, and put them up next.
That would have been more believable, wouldn't it have?
Some lupine corpses?
A litter of lupine.
Night of the lupines.
So you're not convinced that something horrible has happened?
I think the peasants are, but I'm no peasant.
I mean, were you ever...
happened to Osha and Hodor?
Were you convinced in the book?
That what happened actually happened?
Right.
All right, well, should I drop the pretense? Nobody's fooled at this point.
Well, spoiler alert. It's too late
spoiler
for
spoiler alert. Osha and Hodor must have been killed as well, as far as we know.
No. Sorry, guys. There were, along the lines of what we're talking about right now, since I guess we're not really holding back, there were a couple of kind of flat scenes, things that could have been done a little bit better. This feels like a bye week almost for the Game of Thrones plot line to me. Some important things happened, but there was no amazing delivery. There were no super gripping scenes.
There was a couple of good scenes.
No, there were good scenes, definitely. But we've been treated for the last few. In each episode, there were some great things.
Who's treated with you this week?
Renly came to treat with me.
Okay.
See what happened.
In a shadow form.
Oh, here's my big Theon thought.
Here we go.
And this is my theme of the week. Ching. Or I don't have a soundboard.
Chuck's theme of the week.
All right.
Which is a recurring theme of this season of the show, and that's the shifting motivations of characters. I talked about this a little bit last week, that in the interest of condensing and streamlining important plot points, they are changing the reasons why people are doing things. And the biggest thing missing from the Theon storyline is a character named Reek.
Oh, yeah.
And who is the one who suggests to Theon that he should kill the Miller's children and pass them off as Bran and Rickon in order to save face with his men and with the people of Winterfell. And
Reek was, in the book, the Bastard Bolton's servant.
That's right. There's a moment before Theon and his men arrive at Winterfell when Sir Roderick and Bran and everyone at Winterfell receive news that this outlaw, the Bastard of Bolton, and his filthy manservant Reek, who have been at large and they're hunting them down because they raped and murdered some people, they have been apprehended. The Bastard of Bolton was killed, but the filthy manservant was captured, and they bring him to Winterfell and throw him in the prison. And then when Theon comes and captures Winterfell, they empty the prison, and Reek swears fealty to Theon and becomes kind of a worm-tonguey, lick-spittle advisor and servant and he weaselly suggests, hey, why don't we kill these other kids and just pass them off? I'll help you do it, just you and me. Nobody else needs to be any the wiser. And so that's kind of how that goes down. So is it worse for Theon that he chose to do that himself? I mean, he did make the choice even when Reek suggested it. But it was Reek's idea. And then Reek goes on to have other implications in the show. But so in this case, it's almost like it's Finchie's idea. Did Finchie have those walnuts with him to plant the evidence? Is that the implication?
That's what I kind of thought.
I don't know.
Because I don't think they went down there at all.
In the town, did they?
Finchie.
It was a plant. Finchie's a sly guy.
Once again, I mean, Finchie talked Theon into attacking Winterfell in the first place, and Finchie's covering his ass. Finchie smiles his approval whenever Theon does what's expected of him.
There was a lot of Finchie approval.
Exactly that.
Finchie is so approving. Finchie is our cipher for what a good Ironborn fellow expects.
He's a bit of a puppet master.
Maybe Finchie will sit on the Iron Throne one day.
He just might. You never know.
Well, no one knows yet. We'll see.
It is a Game of Thrones, you know.
Well, Finchie's winning.
Score Finchie.
With his winning,
Finchie won
winning smile.
Else,
with burned children.
All right, so that's what's happening at and around Winterfell. Let's go up north of the wall then, and let's get into the Ygritte, Jon Snow...
sexual tension.
Tete-a-tete.
The weather report from up north.
Winter's coming.
But Jon Snow is
his blacks. What?
Hi-yo.
We start off with them waking up from their slumbery night.
In a pretty sweet spoon.
Jon Snow looks like he forgot to set his alarm and he's late for something. Get up. Let's get moving.
Is the implication that Jon is just snuggling or actually like groping her breast in his sleep?
Well, he obviously moves his hand onto her.
That's
her
a
chest.
Snuggle action.
He definitely has
She's wearing a lot
has
of
a boner.
Furs, so he's not really getting any gratification out of that squeeze.
How could you have a boner in that weather? I mean, really?
Well,
the cold makes things hard, Phil.
It makes life hard.
So what did we learn about Ygritte? The free folk are proud, and they scoff at those south of the wall.
They're almost human.
For a good reason, almost.
We get a little feeling for them now.
Exactly. That's an important development for the show, is we're starting to learn what the point of view of a wildling might be. And it's not simply that they're the enemy of the Night's Watch. The Night's Watch, we know their point of view.
They're pretty much Native Americans, is what it was equated to now. Like, this is our land, you know, you guys put up a wall, came out here and set up shop, gave us smallpox, gave us boners.
So they have the nobility of the Native Americans.
That's a really good simile, because they're a free folk, they're a totemic folk, spiritual, with a more earthy kind of, and...
I thought the Dothraki really were supposed to be the Native American.
Yeah, that's good too.
Well, like a Native American Mongol horde hybrid.
But yeah, the Westerosian lords, it's a feudal system, you know, it's European, the whole thing, so.
Well, they don't seem to be tribal in that sense, so it's not a direct correlation, but.
Ygritte makes a great speech, though. She makes a great, we're free, we do what we want. You can do whatever you want. This is the life, baby.
And why the hell would you swear a vow to
old
celibacy?
Men.
Yeah, and John has pause.
There's a lot of talk about vows between Snow and then, well, we'll get into Jaime later. But
that's
I
right.
Mean,
the Kingslayer has some thoughts on vows as well. So Ygritte is clearly messing with John. There's some attraction there. Isn't there? I mean,
she says pretty much every wildling woman would want to bang John, basically.
Come take your pick.
But is she just messing with him to get the drop on him, or do you think that she thinks he's cute?
I think both, definitely. But one thing that she seems towards him is, you know, when people find out you're a virgin, they want to make you their project. Oh, this guy's never, you know.
She said that?
Well, no, I'm saying that.
The de-virginized Jon Snow project.
Do you want to tell us about something in your
I haven't
your past?
Heard anything by them. Are they good?
They're good. Well, so whether her intention was to get laid or just get the drop on Jon, she achieved her goal of getting the drop on Jon.
Yep.
Jon really seems lost and powerless and clueless. What the hell happened to Corin Halfhand and his boys? They just walk off and abandoned John.
They just figure it took John, you know, like 24 hours to kill this woman, and he'll catch up to him later.
There's a little confusion, and I'm a little confused as to where they are, where they're going, and why they can't find each other. Or any of that kind of stuff.
Well, rangers wouldn't be any good at tracking anything. So,
yeah, exactly.
Do we know that they have the Navy SEAL vow of no man left behind, or do they just not give a shit?
No man left behind when convenient.
No man left behind is not part of the Night Watch code. as we know from those Rangers that returned without Benjen Stark. Benjen Stark went missing, left behind.
Those Starks.
Every Ranger left behind.
only Rangers.
Only Rangers.
Behind. Only Rangers left behind.
So yeah, how's he set up now? I mean, he's
a prisoner. A prisoner now.
So
the tables are turned, and we'll definitely see
Rattleshirt.
Rattleshirt, the
Lord
of Bones.
Lord of Bones.
We got a glimpse of him in the
previous. He looks cooler on the show than I imagined him reading the book. He had the cool like Skeletor face shield.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah,
that would make a good Halloween costume. Just that
Skeletor,
just one of those.
It would.
Just a nice bone face.
The Greek was wanting John to give her his bone face. Yeah.
Up top.
I'm surprised when he got captured, he didn't turn real quick to be like, "Okay, we should do it real quick." Yeah. Just, you know,
oh wait,
I might be about to get killed. Let's.
All right, I'll do it.
Oathbreaker! Love Taker!
We're going to do a Zeppelin remix here?
No, an AC/DC remix.
It's a Dark Wings, Dork Words original.
Well, hearken unto me for this motivation change. In the books, John lets Ygritte go after he captures her.
Like, right after.
She's gone, and he catches up to Corrin Halfhand. They move along for a few days. He exchanges words with Corrin on any number of important topics. And ultimately, the wildlings get the drop on the two of them, Corrin and John.
Are you sure that what you're about to say isn't going to come back? Are you 100% sure?
Well, no, I'm really not, because a couple things. For instance, way back when, I believe it was episode 1 of season 2.
Season 2, episode 1.
When Robb Stark has a little talk with the Kingslayer in his pen, I was all up in arms about the fact that it was Lady Stark that did that. But that finally did occur this week. It was just sort of postponed in the
order of things.
So I'm sure, you know, having established who Corrin Halfhand is and establishing him as a character of some interest, viewers are going to want to know what happened to Corrin Halfhand, right?
I feel relatively sure that the thing that happened in the book that didn't happen yet is going to happen soon.
I guess let's belay this conversation until next week.
Belay that order.
But I do feel that Jon Snow is about to do something for a different reason than he did it in the book. And we'll leave it at that.
Sure.
Where's Ghost in all this?
Where is Ghost?
Just letting... Yep.
Ghost just got fed up and wandered off.
Well, he does that in the book.
He does that sometimes.
He doesn't
but
like...
Not when they're north of the wall.
No, when they are north of the wall. Remember when they got close to the Fist of the First Men? He was absent.
But he always came back, like, within a reasonable period of time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But why hasn't he found John yet?
Why isn't he with John?
Yeah.
Period.
Ghost, with me.
Well, he didn't want to come to him. I think it was a CGI budget.
Shit again.
He's hanging out with some wildling direwolf female.
And then a dragon lands on John's shoulder. What?
Parlor tricks. Which there were some of those again.
Yeah.
All right, more than just parlor tricks. John continuing his theme of bumbling about and not being an effective
being a bastard character. Child.
Just being confused and misdirected and that's okay. That's Jon Snow at this point of the story. He may get killed off next week, folks.
He does about the same well as Theon and Daenerys, you know, being new young leaders.
Robb Stark's got his shit together.
Robb Stark is tearing it up. He's doing great.
Arya's keeping her shit tight.
Yep. Sansa, nope.
Sansa.
Well, she's not a leader. She's just a
bird in a cage.
Yep.
Little bird, little dove. Bird.
Little dove.
Bloody little dove.
Let's talk about Sansa, shall we? Sansa has a
rapey dream.
Rapey dream.
Rapey dream, and finds she's a woman grown when she wakes.
And she's terrified.
Yeah, she appropriately is terrified that now she's going to have to
bear children for Joffrey.
Bear children for Joffrey.
Her favorite king.
Disgusting premise. Or
that's a fairly inventive little thing they did. The rapey dream callback to almost getting raped, and then her moon blood was upon her.
Yep.
Moon blood?
I think so, yeah.
Or is it just moon tea that...
Moon tea gives you...
Moon blood. Moon blood.
Moon tea gives you moon blood.
Oh. Let's talk about something else.
So this occurred a little differently than it does in the books, but it does... The important thing is she's a woman grown and she's terrified because now maybe Joffrey's going to try and knock her up.
And knock her around, probably in the bedroom, too. Like
well,
a dick.
Yeah. I mean, anything that gets Joffrey's attention is bad news.
Yep. Is Joffrey ready to bear children? Not bear them, but...
He can't bear them.
I can't bear the thought.
Joffrey didn't know what to do with the prostitutes. He had the wrong idea there, for sure.
That's not how you have sex?
Ask a greet.
Ask Jon Snow.
She'd probably like it.
He says he knows how to do it.
Well,
I've seen the internet.
With your hands, then?
Well, Jon says he knows how to do it. I want him to prove it. Nah, that just sounds a certain way.
Show me.
Sansa has a little encounter with the Hound. And she's like, thank you. And he's like, whatever, I like killing dudes.
And she's like, no, not really, thank you. You're the worst person in the world. And
stalks off. Well, But he had his interesting comment is, you'll be thanking me when I'm the only thing between you and your lord husband.
He doesn't love Joffrey. He has no love for him. In fact, when he catches them in the chamber trying to hide the moon bloody and evidence, he's probably the best person for them that could have caught him. But of course Cersei found out from the handmaiden and other people. But
or did Cersei find out from the Hound?
No.
That was the implication. It's like the jig is up because look, here's the Hound.
Well,
the handmaiden was scared and went off.
I mean, but the handmaiden, she could just tell the queen that this other handmaiden threatened her, and the queen could have her killed.
Yeah, the handmaiden ran off and told everyone who was
listening. I still think probably the Hound told her, too.
I think that's foreshadowing for the whole...
I haven't read the synopsis.
You know, a handmaiden that pulls a knife on another handmaiden is not normal handmaiden behavior. So I think Shay may have revealed herself to Cersei's people.
Sure.
And so that's what that accomplished.
There's an allusion to that.
It didn't accomplish hiding the Moonblood incident from Cersei.
Shay should have killed the handmaiden that was about to go narc, put her in the bed on top of the blood.
But the Hound was already back. He was in there like...
And then killed the Hound.
Right quick.
Now, Shay should have killed the handmaiden.
And the Hound.
Dragged the corpse and the Hound. cut them up into sizable pieces that could be dissolved in acid.
Burn with fire.
Wildfire water.
There you go. Well, yeah. Gone back to her lover, the king's hand, said, you mind if I borrow a couple pots of wildfire? I've got
some bodies to dissolve.
No, don't say that. That'll give it away, see? You're never going to be my partner in crime.
It's not easy.
I got some bodies to dissolve, and I just watched an episode of Breaking Bad, so I think I know how to do this.
It's hard out here for a handmaiden.
Make sure you get the right type of plastic.
Yo, Mr. White.
Bitch. So, what do you think of Shay's whole dealings with that?
Well, it's the first likable thing that Shay's done for the entire show.
No shit.
She came to Sansa's defense in an aggressive way. So, that's cool, right?
Yeah, she's cool.
If you're all in a Sansa. I mean,
you don't like Sansa?
Yeah.
You don't feel underdoggy and wanted to
do
well?
Her storyline, just in general, it's not all that exciting.
No, it's not. She's a flat character, but she's still a noble Stark.
It gets better, I'll say, probably for her, like more exciting type stuff. But so far, I mean, she's.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, Sansa's storyline in the books is a POV into things that are happening with Cersei and King's Landing. It's a window into that world. We get that from Tyrion as well. But, yeah, I mean, Sansa has not spent much time with Ser Dantos at all in season two.
Yeah.
They were, I mean, I expected we'd see a little more Ser Dantos since they established him right away at the top of the first episode.
They should be plotting and scheming by now.
Ser Dantos has yet to thank her for saving his life on Joffrey's name day.
He's reduced to a fool instead of a corpse.
We haven't even seen him drunkenly, pathetically trying to live up to his role as court fool either. So, we've got to get at least one more glimpse of Ser Dantos before the season two is over.
I think the next two episodes are going to be pretty action-packed.
Season two, episode eight.
Season two, episode eight.
Is written by George R.R. Martin himself.
How about that long shot of Harrenhal?
Oh, I love the long shot of Harrenhal.
That was great.
I also like how they showed accurately back then that when they hung people, they didn't break their necks. It was an asphyxiation death.
Oh, you like that?
I did.
For various reasons.
Not only was it a great shot of Harrenhal in all of its horrible glory, but it was a tracking shot that pulls back to establish Lord Tywin, and it's kind of a lead-in to his whole exchange with Arya.
One, also it starts with they make it out to be an assassination attempt on Tywin as opposed
to... That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, the people that they were hanging in the yard
were
being
the soldiers,
hung.
Right?
There were people that the Mountain apprehended to question and find out who's the assassin trying to kill Lord Tywin. And Lord Tywin is like, oh, this is Wolfsbane.
Wolfsbane.
He knows too much about...
He's a man of history. He knows things.
He wouldn't know that.
He couldn't remember the names of the dragons.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Okay, so here's another... This whole thing, this whole sort of banter between Lord Tywin and Arya is unprecedented.
It is.
And furthermore, he's sly enough to get the sense that she's not being truthful with him and is highborn rather than lowborn.
Someone calls her out on that in the book, but it's someone who's on her side saying, be careful not to do that around people because they'll figure it out.
The whole idea of Lord Tywin taking a liking to Arya and having these little exchanges is so not in keeping with...
Not Bookian.
It's not Bookian at all.
I think he might know more than he has let on. Just like this episode, he let us know that he knew more than he let on. I don't think he had just figured that out.
Lord Tywin knows that Arya escaped King's Landing. And here, right under his nose, is a potentially highborn little girl from the north who's educated.
He knows she's a northerner. He knows she's highborn or educated. He knows her story.
That's enough for him to
Her story is bullshit. She's not a stonemason's daughter. Or whatever. Stonemason?
Yeah. I mean, all points lead to, bind her.
Yeah.
Apprehend her.
But he's also, taken a liking or a specific...
admiration, though.
He treats her better than you would treat a servant.
Well, she reminds him of his daughter.
Is that what he... Well, yeah, he did
said
say
that. But she's way cooler than Cersei, that's for sure.
She's stepped out of line twice, and he's allowed it, but knocked her back.
It doesn't make me dislike Tywin. If anything, it makes you kind of like Tywin.
Unless he has...
Because he recognizes Arya's...
She's cool.
Cool.
But what if he's going to... What if he's going to make it be bad for her because of it?
Something's going to go down in Harrenhal next week, that's for sure.
Looks like Tywin was getting ready to leave, basically.
Yes. And Arya seems in a hurry to have Jake and Hagar kill his third victim to pay his debt. We haven't seen Rorge or Biter at all. There's no explanation for why Jake and Hagar wasn't one of those who was apprehended and hung. What's so special about him that he's not a suspect?
Why were you signaling to that girl when that guy got pushed off a wall?
Why were you eating that apple? We saw you.
Right. Oh, you're just up here eating an apple? Phew.
This guy's too cool to question, all right?
We're looking for people to torture who might know, might have something to do with this murder. No, I guess it was a different murder. But it's like...
Those are blended, though, in the book from the synopses I read. They kind of intermingle the second and the third murders with some facts from the show. The litany that she said was mostly soldiers of House Clegane, it turns out. Mostly the people who rode with the mountain. So she had a bunch of people on that list and then some out of reaches like Cersei and other people. But then she just, Weiss pissed her off one day, beat her because she was late coming back. She was actually out getting information. She was late coming back from fetching a sword, actually. And so he's like, beat her. And then she just goes to find Hagar and was like, okay, just kill this guy right now because this is the shittiest boss ever. For all you people who want to kill your bosses, she did it.
That wine is making your lips turn blue. Have you been visiting the House of the Undying?
Chucks into the strong wine.
It's okay. I got a handle on it.
It's only a problem if you try to stop. When you try to stop.
Oh, I won't. It's also... Never mind. I won't bring a Dune reference in.
Why not?
All right. Well, There's another litany in Dune, but the Mentats.
Oh, I thought you were just going to say something in the microphone and blow us back against the wall.
No, that's a dragon shout.
Is that even a Dune reference? Okay, sorry, go on. Mentos. Mentats.
Mentos. Mentats.
The fresh
the smart makers. No.
Oh.
We'll save it for another podcast.
Oh, Daenerys is so pissed off right now on the screen.
She is petulant. Anybody who ever tries to help her with starts a sentence, she just cuts them off with whatever's on her mind at the moment and stalks off. She's done that like 4 times now.
She's at a pretty petulant place in her life.
I understand.
She has cause for petulance. She lost her pets, for one thing.
Petulous.
Oh, God.
Quit defending her, would you?
I was a little fed up with Daenerys last week. That sad display with her argument with the Spice King.
How's this any different?
It's different because she mouths off to Zero a little bit. And she's like, there is no us. You know, with her dragons missing, she's got a little fire in the belly and she's like, shit. My dreams, my plans are slipping away from me here. My people are killed. My handmaiden, she pines for Eerie. Doria is missing. And I know that you, Craig, and you, Phil, are pining for the safe return of Doria.
Didn't you look her up and that girl's way older than she looks?
I think she was 32.
Yeah. Good for her.
32 going on 22.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Evidence this week, it doesn't seem like Daenerys uses or observes or understands the motivations of other people that could assist her cause. Like you said this week, he's like, Zeros is like, listen, you don't understand. Like, I fucked up. You were in my care and my charge. Like, 10 people got slaughtered in my house while I was supposed to be protecting you. Around here, and he kind of drops the... You don't know how it is here. Around here, if your word isn't good, you're nothing. In fact, you are what other people think of you, which is a weirdly weak. It's a weak culture, you know, like because no one ever comes out and says, "Well, I just want people to like me." They come out and say, "I don't give a shit what people think of me. I'm going to be awesome."
Especially if you're the richest guy there.
Yeah, exactly. I
mean. Well, he is feeding her a line of bullshit. As we find out, he was scheming with Pyat Pree the whole time. that he was in fact responsible for the dragons being taken.
Because he's going to be king of
Karth. I mean, that was a whole setup.
Why the appeal? Why his appeal to her? Was he just... He didn't have to try to contain her. He didn't have to try and get her to go anywhere or do anything, because the same reveal that was going to happen was going to happen no matter... He could have just walked off. He could have walked away and been like, okay, bitch.
You're absolutely right. It was only...
So you don't think that there's...
It was purely for an audience misdirect at that point, I believe. So that they could have the whole twisty reveal.
You know what? You're right. And I fell for it. Even though, just a little, in a few minutes after that, they did the whole reveal thing.
What about her conversation with Ser Jorah?
I don't like those dangling... I don't like that dangling...
Participle?
Participle thing that happened there. It was unnecessary. He didn't need to...
Well, and you would think she'd pick up on more mistrust there, and maybe that's why she was so freaked out at the reveal, but...
Well, I guess what it accomplished was that Dany wasn't buying his pitch as I want to help you. She was kind of like, no, there's no us. There's just my dragons are missing, and that's all that matters.
And there's no us in her and Jorah either, it turns out.
There's no us and we.
That she is pretty cold to Jorah, but she sends him on a mission. And he goes to visit Quaithe.
And probably 90 seconds after he gets done saying, I never should have left your side. He's like, all right, I'm going to go leave your side and find out what's going on.
Oh, I remember why you left my side. You were going to find me a ship.
Right, down on the docks, see what's up.
That's right.
Sitting on the dock of the bay.
But I like the scene with Quaithe quite a bit.
Quaithe is...
I like the fact I remembered her name.
What do we know about her besides almost nothing?
Well, we know that she appears enigmatically and mysteriously to Dany at various times and imparts riddle-like bits of advice. But apparently she's going to be doing that with Ser Jorah on the show.
And he's already picked up not to kind of question her. Like, she says something and he's like, okay.
He seems to sense that she's being straight with him, but she tests him. And she says, oh, are you going to betray her again? And he's like, never.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that because she seems concerned. Like, she doesn't want to help someone that's not going to help Daenerys. And we get a firm resolve from Ser Jorah that he's with Daenerys now, for sure. Not that we ever got a sense that he wasn't.
Because we don't really know what this first betrayal was.
We do know what it was. He was informing on Daenerys' movements to the Small Council. We see that happen in season one.
Was it that long ago?
Right before he kills the dude that tried to poison her with the wine in the market.
Right.
We see him speaking with one of Lord Varys' little birds, who says, here's your pardon.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, man. It's taken care of now.
Forgotten that.
You're off duty. You don't have to report on Daenerys anymore. She's
going to be taken care of.
Something to that. That was the implication, at least.
Yep.
But he instead chooses to keep Daenerys alive and serve her. But Daenerys doesn't know any of that.
What a big softy.
But the implication is that Quaithe does know that.
The implication is that Quaithe knows everything.
She's a psychic, I think.
And she looks fucking cool with that thing on her head. Mm-hmm. It's a good look.
It's a Mortal Kombat kind of Mortal Kombat-ian look.
A Melina Katana.
The eyes, for some reason, too, just to get you.
Finish me.
Babality.
That's a Greet talking.
Babality.
Up top.
All right, so... There's the whole reveal where Zero steps up with Pyat Pri to the 13 and say, hey, guess what? I'm the king of Karth now, and you guys are all dead because here come the Pyat Pri squad.
Here comes 12 Pyat Pris.
11.
There's really no explanation.
Counting the one.
Doesn't really give him a chance to say no or say yes. It's...
What is it about the apprehension of the dragons that makes it okay for two of the 13 to turn on the other 11? It's not clear.
There were probably other things before this.
It's, you know, realistically, if there's a free city that's ruled by a council of 13 traders, merchants, and 11 of those are murdered, wouldn't you expect there to be some serious upheaval? The choice that they've made on the show would have implications that go beyond what happened in the books.
Well, what I want to know is who's going to trade spices now?
How are people?
Or gonna, all the other? You know,
how 10 are people going to get the other 11 ingredients? There's no spice anymore.
You know what's going to suffer? The 7-layer salad market.
Well, maybe Zero and Pyatt Pri have cornered the market on
everything else.
Everything.
I'm kind of glad that the Renaissance Fair guy got knifed a little bit.
That's, yeah.
He's probably glad, too. Like, he was like, oh, this is going to be awesome, guys, watching this, when he's watching it back home with his Ren buddies.
That was pretty misleading, too, when Quaithe says, the thief is with her now. Cut to the Spice King saying, I don't know what happened to your dragons. And but then they pan back and say, oh, their whole 13 are there, so it could be any one of them. And Pyatt Pri is one of those.
It's like a giant game of Clue.
Which anyone who read the book, I mean, knew who they were talking about. But
right. Podcast. It was Zerozo and Daxos with a trident in the courtyard.
Pyatt Pri in the tent with 11 daggers.
With 11 Pyatt Pris.
11 Pyatt Pris in the tent.
And we really kind of get more Pyatt Pri magic than is really ever in the book. I mean, does he ever?
I say yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he never does any like weird
stabbing
tricks or anything.
Or does he?
Is he the guy you said last couple podcasts ago? Is he the narrator of the audiobook? Is that what you said?
No, the wildfire guy.
Oh, he's a pyromancer. You see where I got off track? Pirate.
Pyromancer.
Pirate Pri.
Pyro Pri.
Pirate Mancer.
The Dread Pirate Blue Balls.
All of our pirate references so far are wound up.
Blue lips.
Let's cut to
Rob
Stark. Rob Stark's camp. Because there's a Rob Stark and then there's what follows thereafter.
Right.
Rob Stark's war council is interrupted by his field surgeon girlfriend, who, much to the consternation of Roose Bolton.
I think Roose wants her. That's the.
No, I think Roose wants her to fuck off because he wants to talk to his liege lord. And she's like, "Hello, I've
girlfriend.
Do you see the blood on my
apron?
On my apron spot. And my gloves.
My moon blood."
So she kind of comes at with a.
God, you guys,
we're gonna lose.
The female viewers, listeners.
Female viewership.
But so she comes with an appeal to get some more supplies, and she knows that they're going to the crag, and Rob just kind of invites her along.
Rob's like, you like the crag? I take you to the crag. No, Rob's being noble. I thought he might do something like, open up his wardrobe chest and pull out like a silk tunic and say, here, take this, take anything.
That's kind of what
infatuated
I thought too.
With you.
He's a little bit too something towards her for not knowing her at all, in my opinion.
He's too familiar.
He's smitten with
her. He's too familiar. Well,
which was.
Yeah, he's too familiar.
You know the Stark man and letting women control him.
He is the king of the north. He can be free. She's a little too familiar with him. Even though she did...
He lets her be.
He lets her be.
So that's familiarity right there.
Let's just say, you know, kind of like I was talking about before, they've modernized the role of this character, giving her noble purpose beyond it just being a pretty face. Right? Or mm-hmm. Well, no, I mean, she did something off page. Or, you know...
She's done everything off page.
She has no pages.
She knows it exists.
Well, let's not jump to conclusions, I guess.
Well,
they're going to the crag. Maybe Rob will meet and fall in love with Jane Westerling at the crag.
Maybe.
And the field surgeon.
You think she's a filler character?
No.
Okay.
But anything's possible. Okay, so what also happens is Robb Stark meets with Sir Alton, who was the Lannister knight he spared and sent to King's Landing to deliver his terms of
why would they
surrender
put,
or not surrender?
Why would they put two Lannisters
for,
in the same pen ever?
Two Lannisters they didn't have walking room. A bar.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
They're good jailers.
Except for they're not.
Well, it served the story.
I know. There was a little too much story serving in this week's episode. This is my least favorite. But I know we're here because we love it. I'm not trying to be a stick in the mud or anything, but we got to tell it like we see it, right?
Wet blanket.
Yeah.
Wet blanket. This episode was flat.
I agree with Craig.
Yep.
Well, we've just deviated from the core source material, and we need to make a lot of course corrections in order to be in the right place at the right time.
That's not the kind of flat I'm talking about. The Sir Aemery getting killed in the first place and getting killed in such a fantastic, awesome way last week was a deviation from the course, and I loved it. Thought it was great.
But Jane Westerling transforming into a field surgeon from Volantis?
And a little Kingslayer.
A little
moxie.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy the fact that we got a nice big taste of
of Jaime Lannister.
He is pretty sexy.
We haven't seen a lot of Lannister. Whole lot of Lannister. For a lot of episodes, so yeah.
Since like the first episode.
We haven't seen any Kingslayer at all. And his dry wit and sardonic nature.
It's still alive after all this captivity.
Acerbic and all tongue. This is how, like we said, they have to group characters more for the show than they did in the book. Because the book, it's just, I mean, there's 70 chapters in the book. That's a lot of chapters. And there's only 10 episodes. They have to group things up more. Or else. And they did.
So what do we think about Lannister Exchange?
Sir Alton is an invented character who is kind of thrust into the place that Sir Cleos Frey, who was a cousin to the Lannisters, because he married a Lannister daughter, the daughter of someone not directly related to Jaime's family, but still part of the Lannister family. All that is probably too boring to explain in the show, so they just made him Alton Lannister. And that whole conversation is informative for setting and flavor, and also for Jaime's character.
It was good.
His mercenary nature was served by the fact that after bonding with his former squire, with whom he is related, and bonding over, both of their love of knighthood, action,
being infatuated with who you're squiring for, you know.
Yeah, the thrill of the
thrill of the field of death.
The thrill of the tourney and the thrill of the field of battle. The thrill of realizing your dream of being a knight in the greatest sense of the word. He told the story how great it was to squire for him that one day at the tourney. Jamie's like, no, it's all right, because I once squired for Sir Barristan Selmy, and he was the most amazing knight, and it was great. The implication being, he says he's a terrible squire, but when he had the opportunity to kill one of the outlaws in the woods, it led to his knighthood. Right?
Yeah, Jamie did something heroic. I think it was age 15 or 16 in the book, at least. And
yeah, that's all.
I mean, he was the Kingsguard by early on.
And that whole bit about squiring for Sir Barristan is true, too.
Yeah.
Sir Baron Samedi.
He was recalling at that point. The texture of this conversation up to the point where Jaime killed the guy was
kind of
reminiscent of Yoren's speech. You know, it wasn't the same type of thing, but it was the same moody,
totally
character revealing.
Invented,
yeah.
But still, yeah, illuminating what is real for the tone and setting of the show. But then, so Jaime has this whole escape plan. And we were lamenting the fact that there were no Karstarks in the story last week. Well, we get a nice big dose of Karstark this week, too.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than Lord Karstark's two sons being slain by the Kingslayer in the Battle of the Whispering Woods when he was first taken prisoner and grousing about it for months. It's upon Jaime's escape attempt and subsequent recapture that Lord Karstark gets all up in arms, because we see Jaime kill the one guard, which was Sir Karstark's son. And it's all happening while Robb Stark's away. This is all new stuff, but it all is true to the kind of stuff that ought to be going on. We see Brienne and Lady Catelyn as a team, mm-hmm. a unit of sorts.
Yep.
And we finally get that confrontation between Kat and Jaime.
And it was good. It was well done.
Proper insults to Brienne, just as the book.
Yeah. Really. His marveling at, who is this beast? Is that a woman?
His great relationship has begun.
It's too bad that Kat is probably going to behead Jaime at this point, right?
Right, guys.
Mm. Well, she had a sword.
Yeah, I mean,
she couldn't possibly cut any chains with the sword. I mean,
well, Jaime was sensing that the unruly crowd was going to end him. He said, "This is my last night."
Right, and in the camp, yeah.
So then he was goading Kat into finishing him.
Finish him
with all the talk of, I'm more honorable than your husband that slept with some whore.
That got her.
What was her name? Brienne. No, that wasn't it.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I think he probably knows that the closer he is to Lady Kat, even if he's insulting her and doing everything else, the safer he is, because she wants her kids back. He's not stupid.
You think?
He's a valuable prisoner. He's an exchangeable.
I mean, you don't really think that she's going to kill him, do you?
No. I mean, I didn't.
Phil does, because that's
implied.
Because I'm the audience, you know, the TV
That's
audience.
What the audience thinks.
Do you think she killed him?
We'll see next week.
That was my problem with this episode. There were so many flatly stopped, just gate falls on a scene Smash scenes cut. That were...
Well,
They didn't have a suspense build at the end before they cut away.
Not the way that the chapters end in the books?
Not the way that everything else has been this season, or at all. In the show.
Well, I was going to say it's kind of a good shout-out to the way every character's POV chapter in the books ends in a cliffhanger-y moment. That happened with Jon getting captured by the wildlings. It happened with the Kingslayer about to face Kat and Brienne's sword. It happened with Theon being grossed out by the bodies of the children that he just ordered to be murdered. That's not a cliffhanger.
This has a whole, like, I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm exaggerating here, but if I, like, looked at this, who directed this one episode, and it was like fucking, who's the weird guy? Who's the weird guy?
The weird director?
Yeah.
It was something nutter.
It just, okay, never mind that example, because it sucks.
Michael Gondry?
Cronenberg?
This episode to me had a completely different feel stylistically as far as how scenes resolved than anything else we've seen. And maybe nothing, but...
Well, every episode's written by different people, directed by different people. That's TV.
Well, fuck this guy. No, the director. Just quit looking at the guy's butt on screen. I see what you guys
on screen. Male ass.
Picard would call for that.
Quaithe. She's a great character.
You just like her eyes, because...
I do like her eyes.
They're weird like that.
Look at it. Look at him. Yeah. God, Jorah... Sir Jorah is way too everything for his character.
Way too handsome, too noble, handsome. Charismatic.
Yeah. I don't know if they're trying to make... And they haven't done this, or I don't know if they will, but I don't know if they're trying to make Danny more tempted. Well, first of all, you need good people, good-looking people on TV, but I don't know if they're... supposed to be her temptation might be relatable if she ever has it, or because in the book he just was not appealing at all, but she was still tempted.
He was appealing
because
he was so noble,
and she at some couple points she's just like, I've got nothing in the world except for this man.
She felt great affection for Sir Jorah. She called him my bear.
Well, my mom used to call me that,
Craigie Bear.
Yep, secret's out.
So good example, then.
And you betrayed your mom.
Happy Mother's
Day. By having long hair.
Terrorist.
Okay.
So if we missed? We've missed the Cersei.
Tyrion.
Kind of touching moment there.
Yeah, awkward as shit. It was. Because all they know how to do is fight. So everyone's like...
And Tyrion's kind of... He doesn't even know how to move. He's like kind of slowly shifting closer to her, and he's looking away and looking back at her like...
He never really like takes her hand.
Do I hug her? What do I do here?
He just stands there.
Yeah. And then they cut away, finally.
You know, like they do in this episode. They just cut away.
He looks sheepish. He's speechless for the first time. So Cersei, this is another case of Lena Headley
Lamar
making Cersei more likable than I ever thought she was.
You know, she's not too likable still, though.
No, but she, yeah, the whole pragmatic sort of, oh, so you're a lady now, deal with it. Deal with the concept of being married to
a
husband that you can't love.
Yeah, that's more admission on her part.
Give you some womanly advice on this big day for you. Life sucks. Suck it up.
She's as frustrated with Joffrey as maybe Sansa is in some ways. I mean, she's really not happy. He doesn't listen to me. I've tried. Don't you think I've tried?
That was another thing. She basically, in her conversation with Tyrion, acknowledges, I slept with my brother.
Yeah, that was the other.
Yeah, that's the kind other of a thing bombshell.
And I gave birth to a crazy person, just like the Targaryens used to do, because they used to say, if you flip a coin, the Targaryen offspring are either going to be crazy or not.
She did make that admission in the book, though. They had that moment where she's just like, fuck, you know this.
She acknowledges that it was incest that led to Joffrey's madness?
Almost positive. Well, not to his madness. No. Those two things are separate.
That's what I inferred from that conversation. Okay. And then Tyrion has the, you know, he says, you beat the odds. Two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah, he did.
And she cries, and he feels sorry for her, and it's weird.
It is weird, man.
But we kind of get both their opinions on Joffrey. Nobody
likes Joffrey, his own mother. She still seems to be operating under the presumption that Sansa will marry Joffrey. But Littlefinger and Margaery Tyrell have other ideas.
Littlefinger must have been traveling for this episode.
Yeah.
Even though he could warp freely before.
Since he gets around.
I figured he'd show up. I figured he'd show up in Robb Stark's camp this week, maybe.
He's like,
get his.
No Stannis for the second week.
Yep. He's at sea with 200 ships.
Like we said.
Yeah, we get a...
They have to group characters.
Tyrion's read the note many times.
We have foreshadowing of impending siege of King's Landing.
And we have just like winter.
We have... it's definitely coming. We have for two... Coming on three episodes now, yeah.
But it's imminent now. Within 5 days.
I'm kind of surprised how Tyrion didn't bring up a point like... Our own people don't like Joffrey, you know. What just happened here? We almost got killed last week, you know. He's kind of talking like, well, Joffrey, we can't defend this castle against Stannis' men. But, I mean, if your own people hate you, you know, they're not going to come up in arms.
There was a discussion with Tyrion in the book and someone else, another schemer, about, oh, maybe it was Bronn, where they were like, well, you know, if Joffrey was out of the way, Tommen would ascend to the throne. He's much more pliable and malleable, and maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing. And Tyrion almost immediately rejects it as regicide and whatever side it is when you kill someone in your family.
Homicide.
But it comes up. It comes up at least once, how they're like, you know, we should just let Joffrey.
Tyrion's a lot of things, but he's loyal to his family.
He is.
Even Joffrey.
They're making a really not hateable character out of Tyrion. I mean, well, the book did too, so that's true.
He's one of the most likable characters, I think, in the show.
One thing that's missing is I really felt that Tyrion did a lot of scheming and planning and caring about the defense of King's Landing. And we don't, all, apart from visiting the Pyromancer a couple episodes ago, we don't really get a sense that he's doing anything about Stannis about to invade.
That's really like his main, his whole main mission in the second book is,
you know,
defense of King's Landing.
But from last week with the attack, he's kind of leading everyone to safety, taking control. You get that feeling that the Hand of the King's the one who has control of everything going on.
He's the only one
King's
that ever
Landing.
Warns anyone. He's like, this is coming. We got to get cracking.
Well, he was certainly trying to call the shots, but like Sir Meryn Trant or whoever douchey Kingsguard was being a little impertinent. Like, I don't take orders from you. And he didn't have control of the situation at all, that's for sure. But he didn't in the book either.
Did they at some point say they were going to start working on something made out of metal?
Where was Bronn during the whole incident at the port where they saw Myrcella off last week?
He wasn't there.
Bronn, as the captain of the Gold Cloaks, ought to have been there to... I guess he was not present.
He's not the captain of the Gold Cloaks.
He is.
We've had this argument before.
No,
it's fine.
He is the Gold Cloaks.
He is the Gold Cloaks. That's the problem. He was defending the main gate as the sole Gold Cloak in town.
Sole Gold Cloak.
And everyone coming through that gate were cowering in fear at his ominous presence. And left it to the Hound to hold shit together down by the docks.
Even the mount that rides doesn't have the level of respect that Bronn does. The guy's like 8 feet tall.
He spoke this week.
He did. He did for the second time.
And he didn't seem as monstrous as I wanted him to seem, but he's definitely tall.
Boy, I thought he was pretty
you
hulking.
Think he... Does he exude... Well, he exuded power and toughness, but not
a savage
vileness,
type,
I guess.
Yeah.
And, savagery.
You know, one thing in the book where they really go into detail about things is... You know that he's a horrible, horrible person because he does some things, and his people, the people in House Clegane, his soldiers, are just, I mean, like six of them are on Arya's list because they've all done vile crap. They're horrible people.
There's
the
something
worst.
To be said for he attracts the worst followers, or the followers adapt to his leadership style.
Or if you're not bad like that, you get killed off early on or something.
Yeah, I mean... The Mountain and his men are bad news, for sure.
Survival of the shittest.
Yeah, well, at least the Tickler's dead. So that's one down.
No, I still got it.
Phil's pointing at his mustache.
Parting thoughts? Anyone?
Parting shots?
I mean, I agree with Craig about this episode that it was a little slow, but hopefully it's setting up...
The podcast episode, he means.
Yeah, well, that too.
Well, we've just taken on the role or adapted to the episode, and next week's going to be awesome.
We take on the feeling of the show.
We're very empathetic.
Just like Dunson and Polliver take a lead from the Mountain in the way they comport themselves, so we too have taken on a malaise in our commentary on this
general
episode.
General malaise.
Reporting for duty.
It's appropriate, and I'm glad.
All right, folks, we'll be back for more next week. I'm pretty sure episode 8 is titled Battle of the Blackwater, and some shit is going to go down. We didn't see any battle scenes.
Have it for a minute.
But we're about to. See you then.